Earth and Sky.
The Gulf Coast Dead Zone, or waters low in oxygen, reappears each year in the spring and summer off the coast of Texas and Louisiana. In 2007, scientists measured the third biggest Gulf Dead Zone ever. I spoke with Nancy Rabelais, Executive Director of Louisiana University's Marine Consortium at her lab in Cocodrie, Louisiana. She led a science team in July 2007 aboard the Pelican, a NOAA research vessel, which mapped the dead zone. Here's Nancy Rabelais. Dr. Rabelais, welcome to Earth and Sky.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
So tell me a little bit about this recent research cruise that you've taken in the Gulf of Mexico and having to do with the dead zones there. Tell me a little bit about what you found, what's new here.
Well, we have a cruise once every summer to map the area of low oxygen, commonly known as the dead zone, that's off the Louisiana coast, and this year it extended well into Texas. So we start at the mouth of the Mississippi River, and we have a series of transects across the shoreline. We move back and forth, putting instruments through the water, taking samples. And by the end of the cruise, we have lots of data, but we also have the size of the low oxygen area. And that's the main purpose of the cruise, is to get those data. So this year, the pre-prediction for the cruise was that it would be the largest ever. It would exceed 22,000 square kilometers. But this year, it actually turned out to be the third largest, which still approached the largest, but it was more the size of the state of New Jersey this year rather than the state of Massachusetts, which is what the highest year is equivalent to.
Could you maybe tell us what this dead zone is? You know, how is this thing being formed?
Well, the dead zone, as it's called, forms every year off of the Mississippi River along the Louisiana coast. It's primarily a spring, summer, fall situation, and it's caused by the Mississippi River, basically, but two factors of the river. The fresh water that comes in sort of sits on the surface of the saltier Gulf water and creates a two-layer system that prevents the oxygen from the surface getting to the bottom. Winds and storms will mix that up and move the oxygen through the water column, but in the summer, it's pretty much a layer system. The other thing that the Mississippi River brings is nutrients, such as nitrogen and phosphorus, which stimulate the growth of the very small plant organisms called phytoplankton, and they grow more than they would ever grow without this excess nutrients, and they sink to the bottom unless they're taken up by the food web, and then their decomposition on the bottom draws down the oxygen. And when you have that two-layer system, there's no resupply of that oxygen that has been drawn down in the bottom. So you have these large areas without oxygen in the lower water column for extended periods in the year.
Why are scientists looking at this? Is this something to be worried about?
Scientifically, it's of interest because these types of areas are forming all over the world where the nutrient outputs of rivers and coastal systems is causing these dead zones, either these largest ones, like in the Baltic or the Gulf of Mexico, medium-sized ones, such as the Chesapeake Bay, or even smaller ones. So the processes are similar. One of the issues is how these nutrients that get to the water body are processed and lead to the low oxygen, and the other is where the nutrients come from for the point of trying to manage the nutrients that go into these water bodies. One of the reasons that we, besides the science knowledge that we gain every summer about where it is and what its relationship is to currents and biological processes, is that the size is a target for management concerns with regard to the Gulf of Mexico. There is a federal state task force that has an action plan to reduce the nutrients in the Mississippi River watershed so that the size of the low oxygen area becomes more like 2,000 square miles rather than 7,000 square miles, which is its long-term average. So there's a, besides all the science that's garnered, there's a definite management goal for tracking the size. Now, if the size changes, it could be due to lots of factors, just the physical oceanography or the discharge of the river, but the number one strongest relationship with the size of this dead zone every summer is the amount of nitrogen that's delivered by the Mississippi River in the spring. It also responds to the total water discharge, but even more to the nitrate. And the prediction this year was higher because the amount of nitrogen coming down the river in May was much higher per volume than it was in the previous years. So we keep getting more and more nitrogen in the water, and the effect in the Gulf is larger and larger low oxygen areas.
What do these areas look like?
Okay, well, when we're out there, we have anything from dirty brown water through green water, which is usually where the plankton is growing, to crystal clear blue water far away from the river plumes. You can't see the low oxygen from the surface, but you can see the effects of these large phytoplankton blooms as they decay and sink to the bottom. They make stringy particles in the upper water column. You can see that. You can see the effects of the low oxygen on the bottom when animals that normally live on the bottom come up to the surface and try to find some air. And this is most clearly demonstrated when you have swarms of crabs that come to the surface, particularly at night, and are trying to escape the low oxygen water. Usually the fish are better swimmers. They can move out of the area faster. We've seen brown shrimp come up to the surface of the water. We've seen eels that live in the sediments come up to the surface of the water. And this is a trip of about 65 feet for these organisms to go from the bottom of the in the sediments all the way to the top. And not all of them are intended to be swimming organisms. They're obviously stressed.
The National Weather Service predicts a busier hurricane season this year than usual. What effect would that have on this dead zone that you're studying?
Right. Well, hurricanes, of course, are major disturbances in lots of ways, but they also disturb the water column. They mix up the water column and get the oxygen back down to the bottom. So depending on the size of the hurricane, its path, the intensity, how quickly it moves across the area, it will stir up the water column. Some don't affect the low oxygen, but most of them do. And so that alleviates the low oxygen for a little while, but then the river continues to put out water, and this two-layer system redevelops, and then you still have all of the organic matter in the bottom, so that depletion of oxygen just starts all over again. And as long as the water's calm, then you will continue to have the low oxygen. The reason we don't have it later in the fall and the winter and the spring is either a combination of tropical storms or a series of cold fronts start to come through, and that also mixes up the water. Now, for the long term, hurricanes have been predicted to become more intense and more frequent. And, of course, that was called for to have more along the Gulf Coast this summer. Knock on wood, so far we haven't had any because our marine lab sits out on the edge of a marsh near the Gulf Coast, and we don't particularly like hurricanes. But they will disrupt the water column. And if climate change leads to more hurricanes, then the potential, I suppose, is for the water column to get mixed up more on a continual basis than it is right now. I think that's a long ways off, but it's certainly a factor. The other thing that climate change might do is to increase temperature, which would strengthen this layered system, which would be conducive to the formation of hypoxia. The other thing that climate change might do is increase the rainfall across the upper portion of the U.S. where most of the nutrients come from. And in that way, we would get more fresh water, which would strengthen the two-layer system, and more nutrients, which would increase the phytoplankton growth, which could lead to worse hypoxia. So there are a combination of climate scenarios that could make it worse, make it better. How they would interact with each other is not really known as yet. You can do models and predict, but we haven't seen enough data over the long term to be able to verify those predictions.
One question before you hang up on me, though.
All right.
I just want to make sure I say the name of the, is it Cocodrie?
Cocodrie. Cocodrie. It's the Cajun obliteration of cocodrille, which is French for crocodile.
Oh, right.
That's all we have down here are alligators.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, so you see them on a regular basis?
Well, sometimes you see them as roadkill. Sometimes you avoid them rather than hit them. And then we're in a pretty fresh area, and we sometimes see them in our marina right here where our lab is located.
I mean, have you ever had like a close encounter with
them? I had a very close encounter with an alligator after Hurricane Katrina offshore. And this poor alligator had been swept offshore and was at our dive site where we dive on our meters. And it was obviously very lost, and we needed to dive, and this thing kept going under and coming back up and going up. It was about a six-footer. And so we had to dive anyway to try to see what had happened to our instruments, which got totally demolished. So I was actually diving in the Gulf of Mexico with a 6-foot alligator in the area, that's got to be my closest encounter, and it will probably never happen again in my whole life.
Dr. Rabelais, I appreciate taking this time out. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Nancy Rabelais, Executive Director of Louisiana University's Marine Consortium on the Gulf Coast Dead Zone. I'm Jorge Salazar for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.